This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As a reporter for The Washington Post, Patrice Gaines has written about young girls in trouble. Their lives often remind her of her own. She remembers visiting boyfriends in jail and doing time herself for possession of heroin. She was abused by the men she loved and for years didn't have much luck in breaking the cycle. These were the parts of her past she kept hidden when she joined The Washington Post. But in 1992, she wrote an autobiographical piece for the paper that was very well received. This enabled her to start speaking publicly about her life. Now she's written a memoir called Laughing in the Dark. She hopes the book reaches the young girls who are largely silent victims. The media, Gaines says, often overlooks the girls while covering their boyfriends. Here's a reading that helps explain why, as a young woman, Gaines was attracted to trouble.
When I was old enough to want a man of my own, I chose young men who toted guns, burglarized houses, robbed stores, and pulled flim-flams. They were survivors, tough boys who said, "Damn the white man and his ways." They made up their own rules and took what they wanted. When my school bus rolled past their corner, I stared out the window at them swaggering and laughing, wearing the same clothes they had worn the day before because their night was just ending. I could smell their brazenness, their raw guts that I misinterpreted as power. When you're a black child in America, your inclination is to feel powerless, and you will, in fact, lack power unless someone intervenes to teach you how to possess it. I had already bought into powerlessness. Being a black girl child meant I had about as much influence in the world as there was in my itty-bitty finger, or as much as I saw my mother hold in our family. I grabbed hold of these young men who other people called thugs, hustlers, or hoodlums. They were my power and my freedom. What did I know about the power within me?
I'd like to hear more about why you think as a young woman you were attracted to men whose power came from guns and drugs and stealing.
Well, I think it had to do with my being black, but it had also to do with my father. My father was a very patriotic, he was a military man in the Marine Corps, and I looked at him as representing what America represented to me at that time. And this would have been like the 50s, early 60s when I was growing up. And to me, America represented a very racist society where I felt totally powerless. And I felt that my father helped uphold, you know, that kind of oppression against me. And therefore, I wanted someone totally different from him, a more in-your-face kind of person. I guess I would have considered my father, and did consider him, an Uncle Tom. So I wanted a different kind of black man.
Did the men you were attracted to have a political rhetoric that gave some kind of political justification to what they were doing?
I think it may be a mild, we seldom talked politics, but when we did, it was generally just against the white man, nothing specific. It was always to blame the white man, the racist society. But we certainly didn't get into the dynamics of politics and didn't, you know, get into changing things the way other young people were.
The men you were attracted to were not only doing things that were illegal and might have had a certain kind of power and mystery attracted to them, but these were also men who mistreated you. Maybe I should just ask you about, for instance, the first man who you write about, Ben. He was your first real boyfriend. He was the father of your daughter. How did he treat you?
Ben was often verbally abusive, but he certainly slept around. You know, was not faithful as I was, this young teenage faithful girlfriend. So he wasn't faithful to me. I ended up catching syphilis from him. And, you know, just that was a very abusive relationship in that way. And, of course, he ended up turning me on to heroin, to drugs. And that, of course, was the greatest abuse of all.
You were 18 when you got pregnant and had your daughter. You weren't married to Ben. And I guess I'm wondering what your reaction was about becoming a mother at that age. Were you... Did you feel ready for it? Did you want to be a mother yet?
Well, it's funny. I never was afraid and never was sorry that I was pregnant. From the time I found out I was pregnant, I was happy. I mean, I was scared only because I would have to tell my parents, but I wasn't afraid of being a mother. But I think that's because I really had no idea what it meant. And my mother had 7 children, and it all looked to me that it was pretty easy for her. And so I really, you know, had no idea about the responsibilities. Certainly didn't think about, you know, how was I going to take care of this child, not just physically, financially, what was her future going to be? I mean, at that age, I didn't even know what my own was. And so it was nothing planned, and I was happy.
Mm-hmm. You were arrested and convicted when you were, I don't know, I guess around 20, for possession of heroin. You were holding it for Ben, and you were at a concert with him, and he ended up selling to undercover narcotics agents who knew that you were with him, and they came and got you. So there you were in prison, a young woman, and it must have been a scary experience.
Well, yeah, now that was pretty frightening, because even with all of the things that I had done that one would consider dangerous, I certainly never even considered that I could get caught and end up in jail. I mean, that was just, no one in my family had ever been to jail, so I didn't know anyone other than these guys. They talk about jail, but they were in and right out. And so I knew nothing about jail, and that was really, it was very frightening. It made me stop, you know, for the first time in my life and consider what I was doing and where I was going.
Your family got you out of prison by putting their house up for the bond, and you were given 5 years probation instead of 5 years in prison. It sounds from your description in the book like that was something of a crisis for you, because on the one hand, this is the family who you'd rebelled against. On the other hand, it was their middle classness that bailed you out.
Exactly. And even it was specifically my father who was able to do it because of the fact that he was middle class and had worked and did purchase a house. And so that I had to rely upon everything that I had rebelled against, including my father, to get me out.
So did that change your feelings about your family at all?
Well, it certainly, you know, it changed them somewhat. I still had a lot of anger against my father, and I didn't realize for years that it was anger. But I was angry with him for not being there for me in a lot of other cases, you know, for even not being there to come and visit me when I was in jail, for, you know, not being there to come to school when, you know, there were programs, for just not being there for me emotionally. So I always had this anger, you know, this kind of background or underground anger that I carried against him.
Patrice Gaines is my guest. She's a reporter for The Washington Post and author of a new memoir called Laughing in the Dark. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Washington Post reporter Patrice Gaines is my guest. Her new memoir is called Laughing in the Dark, From Colored Girl to Woman of Color, A Journey from Prison to Power. I want to ask you about an incident that I think it's fair to say was a real low point in your life. You got involved with a man who other women had warned you about. He was a very flamboyant dresser and had 2 gold teeth, but you got into nice talks with him and everything, and liked him sexually as well. I mean, one day he locked you in a room, whipped you, and then raped you. Whipped you really badly.
Yeah, terribly badly. I at first did not realize or even think that he had raped me. I mean, which is what he did, because once he beat me, I was pretty almost lifeless and unable, you know, to move myself. And so then he had sex with me. And I wasn't sure it was rape, because this is some time ago, and certainly the word, the phrase date rape had never even been mentioned, and I had dated this guy. But I did know that he had beaten me severely, and that was totally unacceptable. And yet I was afraid to go to the police because of my previous record, because of my background. So I hesitated to go to the police until a girlfriend said, you know, you've got to go. And that was after she looked at how badly he had beaten me. And when I went to the police, they also were a little reluctant to believe me, or seemed disinterested, until I told them about the beating. And they had a woman police officer go into the bathroom with me and look at my wounds, and when she described them to them, and also she took Polaroid pictures, and when she described them and they saw the pictures, well, then the men, the police officers, were outraged. And it always struck me, you know, just as a sign of those times, that they seemed more outraged about the beating than actually about the rape. But they did go out after that to look for him, and I must admit that I prayed that they wouldn't catch him, because I just didn't think that I had the strength or whatever it took to go through a trial like that.
Did they catch him?
No, they never did. They never did. He left town, and I was just happy that he had left, and really happy to end that chapter, you know, to not have to go to court and not have to have my whole reputation dragged out. I had very little, I did not believe at all that they would find him guilty during this age. I didn't believe that they would find a black man guilty of raping a black woman who he had dated, you know, a woman, period, who had dated someone, and then this person had raped her. And on top of that, a woman with a reputation as mine. I just did not believe it, and so I didn't want to put myself through that.
You write in your book that you thought of yourself as the perfect victim for men. Was there a point where you said, I'm not going to be a victim anymore?
Yeah, I think there was, but I really think that that's been even in more recent years. I mean, I decided not to be a victim in lots of ways over the years, but I think what happened was maybe I traded one form of being a victim, one kind of victimization for another, so that I knew I was not going to allow myself to be physically abused. But I think sometimes we allow ourselves to be abused in ways that, you know, we can fool ourselves and try to rationalize and say we're not being abused. So that I dated men who maybe cheated on me or who disrespected me in ways where it was simply just to say I'll be there at a certain time and didn't show up, or they lied. Well, then that's abuse also. So I think it was only probably 5 years ago that I said, never, not even that, not even a little lie, you know, nothing against me is going to be admissible. I won't allow it.
What do you think changed in you?
Well, I think my sense of self-worth, I think that it went up and up and up as I gained different successes, and as also I learned to just accept myself and not blame myself so much, to forgive myself, really. I would forgive other people so easily and would not forgive myself, so that I still considered myself, you know, the bad kid in my family, the bad daughter, I thought I was the bad mother, even though I thought that was the only thing I could do right. I would find ways to say, well, look, you know, I did this wrong. And I was always beating up on myself. So I think finally, a little slowly but surely, each year, I learned to accept myself. I saw that my daughter was a mentally healthy young woman, and I thought, you know, I didn't do so bad. I saw her graduate from college, and I thought, well, now, you know, I couldn't have been so horrible. And I had successes on my job, in my career. And so finally, I just, you know, I learned to love myself enough, and I went to therapy, and that helped a lot.
Patrice Gaines is my guest. Her new memoir is called Laughing in the Dark, From Colored Girl to Woman of Color, A Journey from Prison to Power. We'll be back in a minute. This is Fresh Air. Back with Patrice Gaines. Her new memoir is called Laughing in the Dark. She's a reporter for The Washington Post and often writes about the inner city. You wrote an article about a shooting, and it was the boy who got shot was a close friend of your nephew's, and in fact your nephew was grazed by bullets in this shooting. And I guess, you know, I read that article in the context of knowing the romance that you had about men with guns when you were a young woman.
Yes.
And I was just thinking about how much your thinking must have changed about that.
Oh, yes. I think aging is a wonderful process.
Yeah, really.
which I often look at young people who I write about who die, say, at age 21 and 22. And, you know, what is written about them is how horrible they are because of the life they lived to that point. And I think if I had died at that age, that would be my obituary. And what would be theirs if they could have lived 10 more years? And so I try not to judge them so harshly. But it was a, you know, to be able to change to the point, even where I have these experiences and these thoughts, I think, you know, that incident with my nephew, it just brought home the things, the stories that I write about. And there's nothing like a personal experience to really, to teach you, to make the teaching stay and hold fast forever.
What happened to your nephew?
Well, he's a wonderful kid now, and he's recovered at least physically the scars. But he was standing in front of a church, sitting on the steps of a church, actually. It's a church on the corner near where I used to live. And he was sitting there in the evening with some of his friends. And they often hang out on the corner because these are small row houses, and there's really nobody who has a large enough space for these tall teenage boys, you know, with these long legs. And so they would hang out there, and he was sitting there with some friends and with a very good friend, Hank. And a guy walked past them and started firing into the crowd, and Hank was killed. And Hank was a kid who was getting ready to go to college and had a promising future and was loved and respected by everyone in the neighborhood. And the word on the street was that it was mistaken identity, that this guy was looking for someone else. But, you know, my nephew saw this, and I often wonder, you know, I mean, what is it like to live with seeing your good friend shot, gunned down, shot in the head, you know, and watching him fall dead right at your feet? I just don't know. I know that there are scars that we'll never see.
What kind of stories do you like to write about now?
Well, I do. I like to write about kind of redemption stories, as I call them. I like to write about people who have overcome all kinds of challenges, not necessarily the type that I have overcome, but just have changed their lives. Like most recently, I wrote about a woman who took $5,500 of her personal savings and started a community center for kids and doesn't have even money to pay herself. But people who do things that I, quite frankly, don't even do and wouldn't, and I don't have, you know, whatever it takes within my spirit to do it. And yet I admire them so, and I think it helps us to all know, to know that they exist.
I may be wrong, but it's my impression that there are more stories like yours being told now from the male point of view than the female point of view.
Oh, I think that's definitely true, and has been for quite a while. I think as the role of women and changes and what we expect and how we see women, we're feel freer to tell our stories. For instance, I know I was still reluctant to talk about sex because I think a lot of men still think of women as not being able to have these full sexual lives and certainly not to be promiscuous. And I was afraid, you know, that whole thing. And whereas men will write about this, they'll write about their aggression and it's expected. I think it's almost respected in a way that they would act out their anger in these aggressive ways. Even if people say, you know, tish, 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 they still seem to enjoy reading it. And yet, I was afraid, you know, I'd be called whore, slut, and all kinds of words still. And so I hope, too, that by telling my story, it would free up a lot of women to tell theirs, because there's so many young girls who desperately need to hear them.
You know, something else that I think might be harder for you to tell, your male counterpart would be in the position of being the aggressor, both
yes.
sexually and in terms of,
yes.
you know, doing illegal things, robbing stores or whatever. You are in the position of often being the victim.
Yes.
And not even being the victim of, like, white society, but being a victim of your own boyfriend, of your black boyfriend.
Exactly.
And that's writing more out of, I think writing out of being victimized is maybe more difficult than writing out of remembering when you were strutting and aggressive and, you know, sticking it to society.
Well, it's true, because even my editor said to me, and it was a concern, people aren't going to read, you know, you have to be careful. They're going to get tired of reading about you being victimized, because we don't like victims. We want them to get over it. We want them to recover and straighten mm-hmm. out their lives. And we don't understand, you know, why are they so stupid and why do they keep doing this? And yet we'll ride along, so to say, we'll watch as a man acts out his aggression. And I think, you know, our stories, as I say it, our stories just aren't respected as much. And even in the media, I found myself writing more about men than about the young women, which is, you know, why I wanted to do this, because they were the silent people, and yet their lives are profoundly affected by those same things that affect the lives of the men.
Patrice Gaines is a reporter for The Washington Post. Her new memoir is called Laughing in the Dark.